Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This morning on the program, we will give you the opportunity to talk with another candidate in next month's election from here in East Central Illinois. Our guest in this hour is Rex Spreadfield. He is Republican who is running for the Illinois House in the 103rd District. That district essentially is the city of Urbana and about, I don't know, two-thirds, I guess, of the city of Champaign, something like that.
The southwest corner of the district is clipped off. So the new subdivisions around Duncan Road and Windsor Road are clipped off.
So essentially, I guess we're talking about Champaign and Urbana, you know, basically.
That's it. That is all it is Champaign-Urbana.
And his opponent in this race is two-term incumbent Naomi Jacobson, Democrat. She will, by the way, be on this program 1 week from today, so you'll have the same opportunity to talk with her. So she'll be here on Friday, November 3rd. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest, Rex Spreadfield. He was born in Indianola and has spent all of his life living in East Central Illinois. He's a graduate of the University of Illinois. He has a degree in engineering. He is a civil engineer and land surveyor. He has his own business, Zamco Incorporated, that's located in Urbana. This is his first run for office. And he's here with us and was here to answer questions. And I will ask questions, but here the more important thing is we hope people who live in the 103rd will take the opportunity to ask questions, too. So if there is some particular issue, something that's really important to you, this is your chance to call in and talk about it with a candidate. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana folks here. I guess I would give the toll-free line, but I don't think there should be anybody who should have to use the toll-free line to call in. So 333-WILO. That's the number. Thanks for being here.
It is my pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me. This is a new experience, and it's wonderful to chat with people like yourself and the voters.
Now, this is your first run for office. Right?
It is the first time I have run for any office except for the professional organizations that I belong to. And, of course, in the professional organizations, if you're the president of one of those, that means you didn't show up for the nomination meeting.
The guy who wasn't there got nominated.
Yeah, you learn about it when the next monthly flyer comes out, and they tell you that you're nominated for the presidency. So
what makes you want to run for the legislature?
Well, actually, because of my professional career, I come in contact with many people from the University of Illinois, from Illinois Department of Transportation, Illinois State Water Survey, a lot of people that work for the state. And they were just furious that the state had chosen to, in essence, violate their employment contract and not contribute to their pension funds. And because they know me to be someone who is probably a Don Quixote type that jousts windmills, they asked me if I'd be interested in running against the incumbent, and I said, sure, why not?
Let me also, I did not intend to leave off the fact that there is a Green Party candidate running in this district as well, and I am not sure whether he will be on Focus. I'm sure we have extended the invitation for him to be on Focus, so we definitely want to have that access. They're open to all the candidates. Anybody who's on the ballot, you know, we're getting a chance to be here on the show. So if he's on the schedule, we can mention it. I'm sorry to interrupt there. I just want to Tom Rogers came in and just reminded me that in fact that there is a Green Party candidate in this district. So.
Well, and interestingly enough, the two candidates that are running against Naomi Jacobson, both of us are engineers. I'm a licensed professional engineer. And Tom works in the environmental area of engineering, primarily in energy conservation areas. So he's a very, very nice young man. He's very nice.
Let me follow up on what you were talking about, because I think that there are a lot of people who are concerned about the state of the state's pension funds. And the fact is that I believe that it is true that the state of Illinois has the distinction of having the most underfunded pension system in the entire country. There are people that are really concerned, people that are teachers, people who work for the University of Illinois and so forth, that are concerned about this. What are your concerns, and how do you think that the legislature ought to address this issue of underfunding of the pensions?
Well, the first thing that I wanted to mention on there is that you mentioned Illinois as being last in something. And I've lived here my whole life. I've had opportunities to move to other states, and I've lived here my whole life. And I'm just so disappointed when Illinois is described as being last in anything. As far as the pension funds are concerned, there is no question that we have a very significant problem in it. And it was not necessarily for this particular bill that passed. It just made things extremely bad as far as the pensions are concerning. Quite frankly, the pension, and for lack of a better term, a diversion of funds. It is unconstitutional to take money out of a pension fund. So if you have a ship full of money that is heading toward the pension fund, it is not unconstitutional to raid that ship, to divert it, to take all the money off of it before it gets to the fund. What had happened, and I looked into this before I made my decision to enter into this race, is that the state budgeting process is a budgeting process that seems to be backwards in the way that it's done. They decide on what they want to spend money for, and then they go back and see if they have the money to spend. In this case, there were some irresponsible bills that were not attractive to both parties, but they included them in the budget. It came time to pay the piper, and the way that they could pay the piper was either A, they could borrow money by a bonding process. But the bonding process required that three-fifths of the General Assembly, both houses, approve that. They did not have enough votes from the other party to do that. So they chose to introduce Senate Bill 27, which diverted the funds. But that only required a simple majority. And then the money got spent.
Hmm. Well, what do you think could be done, should be done, to prevent that? Let's say specifically money that is intended for the pension funds for being diverted and put into other kinds of spending. I mean, would you say, for example, that somehow that there should be a legislation to pass a law that says you can't do that?
Well, certainly that's what you'd like to see happen. But more importantly, what you want to look at is the integrity of the actual using this method to get funds. Let's just say you and I, we're sitting here at this table as individuals. If you had your best friend that worked for you and part of the deal was that you would don't pay him a salary and a pension fund, and you said, gosh, I'd like to have a new Mercedes. I want to have a nice automobile. Would you consider taking that best friend's pension funds and buying that Mercedes with it? Nobody would. No normal human being would even consider that. You'd consider going down to the bank or tapping into your reserves or whatever. But the last thing that you would do is take something away from your friend. Well, that's what the state did. And so you've got this level of integrity that has to be protected. I mean, you have to protect yourself from people without integrity by having any type of diversion require a three-fifths vote or something like that. And I'd certainly support that.
Mm-hmm. It sounds as if you also have questions about the spending priorities of the state, where the money is going. Are there some places where the state is spending money where you would say, I would cut this? Either I would cut it part or I would cut it all so that the total spending would be less.
Well, what I would like to see happen is that, first of all, the state just becomes fiscally responsible. In other words, you have certain obligations that you're supposed to have and pay those obligations first. Pay for higher education. Pay for, K through 12 education. Meet your funding requirements for the things that you must meet. Then if you have money left over for other projects, determine which projects are attractive and necessary and fund those projects. And if there's no more, then don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything in particular that stands out in your mind that you would say, we're spending too much on this, or a particular program, we would say, well, that's a nice idea. I mean, it would be nice to do that. But the fact of the matter is we just don't have the money to do that.
Well, it's very difficult with the budgeting process as the state has it right now to sort through what the money is actually being spent for. For instance, in the latest budget, there was a line item for $800 million. $800 million. That's undescribed. You don't know what it's being spent for. So it's very difficult to do that. Local legislators have asked the governor to describe what that money is being used for, and they don't get any response. So having no knowledge of what they're actually spending it for, I really don't know what it is. But if you're hiding something, it certainly has a bad appearance.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the criticisms that I think has been made of the legislature, that is of the way the legislature is structured, it goes back to however many years ago it was that we reduced the size of the legislature. It's smaller than it was. An effort that was really spearheaded by Pat Quinn, who is now the lieutenant governor, but long before he was lieutenant governor. And the criticism is made is that what happened was that now, because the legislature is smaller, that it really concentrates power in the hands of the legislative leaders and the governor, so that they go into a room and they sit around and decide what's going to be, and then they come out to the members, and it's kind of, then you just have to vote up or down.
Right.
What is there something that you think could be done to address that, what many people think is an imbalance of power between the legislative leaders and the rest of the General Assembly?
Well, first of all, you have a state of 13 million people, and you have three people that are creating the budget and are creating it behind closed doors. There's nothing good can come out of that. Even if they are extremely qualified in financial matters, that's just, you just can't get it done at that point. What you'd like to see is you'd like to see legislation that says the budget process must be completed and into the hands of the legislature maybe 2 months before they have to vote on it. That gives them time to research all these very important matters, find out what the money is being used for, and then decide on which have merit and which don't, or which resources, you know, what type of taxes or fees or whatever you're planning to pay for these things, how they're going to do it. Then the legislative process happens in the way that the original founders hoped it would, in that the people really do have a say. Mm-hmm. The budget process could be, the budget itself could be condensed and published in the papers, and people like yourself could announce some of the issues over the radio. And then the general public would have the opportunity to contact the legislators and say, look, we don't need a statue of Emil Jones in Chicago when we're diverting funds from our pensions. Let's get our priorities state here. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see something like that. Big companies do not do what the state does. The big companies, the budgeting process for the big companies is going on continuously, and it is very carefully thought out. Otherwise, they go out of business.
Yeah. So you would say that probably the best thing that you could do would be more openness in the process, get the details of the budget in the hands of the members earlier so that they can be more discussion about where it is that the spending goes.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as an engineer, when we design projects, what we do is we come up with our best solutions that we can come up with. And then, for lack of a better term, we brainstorm and we bounce everything off of fellow engineers that have different areas of expertise. And eventually we come up with a correct solution. And we know it's correct because the building doesn't fall down or the road doesn't break up.
Yeah. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Rex Bradfield. He is a candidate for the Illinois House in the 103rd District. There are three candidates, the incumbent, Naomi Jacobson, she's Democrat, and also Tom Abram, who's candidate of the Green Party, and the two of them will be on this program. Naomi Jacobson will be here on Friday, November 3rd, and Tom Abram will be here on October 31st. That's next Tuesday, I believe, and your opportunity to be the same. You can call in here and ask questions. So if you'd like here to talk with our guest this morning, 333-9455 is the number. We do, in fact, have a caller here ready to go, so let's do that. Someone listening in Champaign, and this is line one. Hello.
Hi, my name's Katie,
mm-hmm.
And I was calling to ask Rex, why did he support the big companies and the rate utility hike? He was against the legislation that would allow that would allow the utility hike to happen. So we're just wondering why he was siding with the companies and not the consumers.
Katie, let me ask you a question. Are you a person that might be on a fixed income, or are you just a person that's like the rest of
us? I'm just a student, and I read a few letters to the editor in the News Gazette about how you were someone who didn't support the freeze on the utility hike.
Katie, you're absolutely correct. I was the only candidate of all the candidates that initially stepped forward and said I would not support the freeze. Understand that when things are reported, sometimes some of the facts get left off. So if I may set a few of the issues straight, when the legislation was passed in 1995, that was a deregulation legislation. That meant that before that time, the power companies and utilities were regulated by going through a state board. And the rates and the way that they operated were approved by this state board. That legislation required that the power companies reduce their rates at that time by 20%. So when that legislation was passed, the rates were somewhere around, I think it was 10 cents a unit, and they had to reduce it to 80 cents a unit, and it was held at that for 10 years, and the 10-year time is coming up right now. The proposed rate hike initially was anticipated to be somewhere around 40%. So of that 40% that the utility companies are seeking to get their money back, 20% of it was caused by the state immediately because they required them to reduce it by 20%. Now, 10 years at an average of 1.5% inflation is 15%. So you have 20% and 15% that are outside the control of the power companies. 35% of the proposed 40% increase is outside their control. The legislation controlled part of it, and then inflation controlled the other part, and they were unable to increase their rates to offset either of those percentages. In the meanwhile, that bill also had a splitting of the companies that produce electricity and those that provide the electricity. Ameren's is a company that provides it, and they have to purchase it from the producers. The producers were charged significant fees by the governor's office, and those fees were passed along. Ameren's estimated it to be about 2%. So actually, the rate hike that they finally have sought, and they are not going to, I don't believe that they're going to try and impose it all at once, is only a 3% rate hike. I support big business, but I do not support gouging. I certainly do not support the way oil prices fluctuate up and down. And I spoke with Ameren's, and what Ameren's preference was is to extend the recovery of this 40% over a period of time. I do support that because no business can stay in business for any extended period of time without being allowed to adjust their rates as the free market requires them to do. Because the legislation froze the prices, those companies that produce the electricity were not encouraged to make any type of development of additional producing facilities in the state because they knew that they weren't going to get any money. The state had frozen the prices. They have developed in surrounding states, and anybody that's in the state of Illinois has the ability to sell it outside. So what is going to happen, and you saw it happen immediately when the legislature started to do this, is a way that they can sort of buffer themselves from not being able to recover any of their fees is to reduce services. And you saw in the paper last night, they also are going to reduce some of the benefit plans for people that have all electric houses. They were usually getting a break, and now they're not getting those. So in answer to your question, I do not support big business. I support the free market. The General Assembly made the decision to deregulate, and yet the bill contained a regulation clause. And that regulation clause is they froze the rates. The solution here is not to bump everybody a huge amount because I can't afford to pay it, you can't afford to pay it. The solution is to sit down at the table, work out an agreement where these things are spread over the years, and make sure that everybody can afford to do them. And at that point, allow the free market, as the original bill was intended to do, to see if the market forces will allow the rates to go down. There's been a big talk about all the profits that the power company makes, but understand the power company is a stock market company. They're on the open market. People invest their money in there, and they expect a return. Those profits do not necessarily go to the company. They go to the stockholders, which are you and I. My mother, she never made more than about $1,700 a year, and yet Mom had $500 worth of Illinois Power stock. Illinois Power was a great company to invest in for your retirement. And so you can't expect the state to hold prices down and deny those people who are investing or who are putting their money into the company. So if the state wanted to make it a free market, make it a free market and don't mess around with it. If we freeze it for another 3 years, there's no guarantee that the state's not going to come forward and say, hey, we don't want it to go up 60%, and we want you to do all these things. Well, no, it's not a free market anymore. It's a socialized state-owned company at that point, and then you're back to regulation. So the state is confusing the free market and what they can and can't do.
I appreciate the comments of the caller. I have a couple of others. We're already at our midpoint here. Just very quickly, do you think the state have done anything to encourage the kind of competition that was promised when the deregulation went into effect? Or do you think the fact that they put this rate freeze in effect, that actually killed the possibility of any competition?
Well, the rate freeze is regulation, and yet the bill was a deregulation bill. And you can't have free market with any of the free market forces being controlled by legislation. So what the state should have done is to tell the power companies that, you know, this is a rate that you've got right now, and over a 10-year period of time, we're going to be watching you to see if you're gouging or anything like that, because obviously they're a monopoly. Mm-hmm. And at that point, they could have looked and see how the free market goes. The reason that they only had about a 3% increase that they actually needed over the years is because they had to upgrade their equipment, and modern technology made the equipment more efficient, so their costs didn't go up as dramatically as they would had it not been for the new equipment that is developed now. So the state made a huge mistake when they did it. It was not a well-thought-out bill because they included in a deregulation clause a regulation requirement.
Well, I want to continue and talk with some other callers. And also just mention, by the way, real quick, that as it happens, we're going to talk some more about this issue, about electric utility deregulation in Illinois and elsewhere. We'll talk some more about that in the next hour of the show, the 11 o'clock hour. And our guest for the program will be George Gross. He's professor of electrical and computer engineering at the U of I. And one of the things that he studies is utility regulation. So more on that in the next hour.
Wonderful.
Let us continue here and talk with another person who is on the phone. And we have some other Urbana callers. And I believe we'll go next to line number two. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I'm really enjoying listening to your thoughts on all these matters. I have a real quick question. Number one, what is an up and down vote?
An up and down vote.
You mentioned that a few minutes ago.
I think that's basically when we're referring to the fact that if the members of the legislature are presented with a budget, they can't look at particular parts of it and say, I favor this part, I don't favor that part. Either they have to vote yes to the whole thing or they have to vote no to the whole thing.
Yes. Right. Yeah, that's
sort of shorthand for that. It's like a fait accompli. The legislature, you know, you can say yes, you can say no, but the details are set.
I see. My second question is probably requires a longer answer, but I'm concerned about the effectiveness of a junior senator in accomplishing some of these things. So far, I agree with everything that you've said, but I'm just not sure that a junior senator would have the oomph that's needed to form a coalition or acquire allies in any effective number. Could you address that?
Well, first of all, I'm running for the state representative position rather than the senator's position.
Oh, sorry.
But it's the same. I mean, that's a good,
same,
you know, it's a good question.
Thing, right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
The second thing is I'm 6 foot five and about 230, so I'm not junior to very many people. But that's a question that I've been asked, and it is an excellent question, and I thank you for asking it. The way that you get things done as a junior or a freshman member of the legislature is in the committees. For instance, as a professional engineer, I appear before county boards, state boards, city boards, drainage districts, whatever. And my job is to convince those people that my ideas are suitable ideas for their constituents, except I do not have a vote. I'm going in there only on the merits of my ideas. I've been doing it for 30-some-odd years, and it works because good ideas are difficult to vote against. But what you do is you do it in committee. For instance, my opponent, Mrs. Jacobson, said that she was very fortunate to get $12 million for the University of Illinois this year, when in fact she had the opportunity to get much more money in a committee for the University of Illinois, and the reason was is that through political pressure. One of the things that the governor was wanting to do was is he wants to and will sell student loans when they, if he is reelected. Those student loans will provide money into the general revenues fund, and some of it will go back to the students, but not all of it. That is a very sensitive issue for Democratic candidates because the students voted unanimously to not sell the student loans. The student senate said, do not sell our student loans. Mm-hmm. The bill came before Mrs. Jacobson in her committee, and it was a bill that was sponsored by a Democratic legislator that said the state of Illinois shall not sell the student loans. The governor or Mr. Madigan told Ms. Jacobson to vote against that in that committee because he did not want it to get out to the floor where they would have to expose their hand and either vote for it or against it and risk loss of student votes. What she could have done in the committee was simply do this. Go to the governor and say, I will vote the way you want to, or go to Mr. Madigan and say, I will vote the way you want to, but you throw $30 million or $50 million into the University of Illinois. Then at that point, she would have got the money, and it all would have been done in a committee where there are only 7 votes, 4-3, and it would be 4-2 send it out to the floor. That's the way you do it, is that you, even though you're on a different party, you find some issue that is of concern to somebody in a committee, and you go to them and you say, look, you may have something that I will support in the future, but I want you to either kill or to send this vote to the floor. And that's the way you get things before the floor. Remember, the legislative process is one of deception. And the more that you can deceive the general public and keep things off the general floor, the better off you are. So that's the way you do it as a junior person, is you do it in the content of the committee regulations.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call. It was really a good question. Engineers always appreciate good questions.
Well, let's go here to another caller. This is line number 3, also in Urbana. Hello.
Hi, my name is Jill, and I'm from Urbana. I was just wondering how you feel about a women's right to choose.
A women's right to choose?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the Constitution of the United States gives us all personal rights, and I think those rights are rights that should not be a part of government. And so my position has always been that I believe that a personal choice is exactly that, a personal choice, and government should not be involved in it.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for your help.
Let's go to line number 1. This is also Urbana. Hello. There's a caller here, line 1 in Urbana. Yes, maybe.
Hi. You have no elected experience. Do you think that we need a representative with real experience, and do you think people will listen to you?
You are correct. I do not have any elected experience. And do I think people that will listen to me? Yes, I do. As I say, I have the opportunity to speak before all types of boards. And one thing that, of being a professional engineer or a land surveyor or any licensed professional is that people do listen to what you say, because the state says what he says or she says has merit because we believe that they are someone that we would license and allow to advise the people in the state. As far as experience, the only way you can get experience is to get in. And had I not have believed that I could do this, I could not, by the terms of my profession, I could not run because I can't embellish my position. I can't make fraudulent statements. I can't lie and make my nose grow. As a professional engineer, it's illegal for me to do that.
Let me just jump in here and introduce again our guest for anyone who might happen to have tuned in as we're all so past our midpoint. The guest is Rex Bradfield. He is a Republican candidate for the Illinois House in the 103rd District. He makes his living as a civil engineer and land surveyor. He has his own business, Zamco Incorporated, in Urbana. And as we have pointed out, as some of the callers have pointed out, he's making his first run for office. There are three candidates in this race, the incumbent, Representative Naomi Jacobson. She's a Democrat. She will be on this program 1 week from today, Friday, November 3rd. Also, there is a candidate of the Green Party, Tom Abram, and he will be on this program next Tuesday. So we'll give you the opportunity to speak with each of the candidates. And again, if there's some particular issue that you want to talk about, you can call us. 333-9455. That is the number for folks here who live in Champaign, Urbana. The next caller is on our line number two, I think. And I think this is also Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question for Mr. Bradfield, how does he feel about Republican efforts to privatize Social Security?
I'm not sure that's an issue for the Illinois State Legislature, but if he wants to talk about that, he can do that.
As far as privatizing Social Security, I've looked at a lot of those things, and truly that would be something that would be in the hands of the congressmen and the senators for the state in the federal levels. I don't believe that I have enough information to really make a comment, even a personal comment towards that, other than I certainly feel like the Social Security system needs to be addressed, and there needs to be some things changed about it. What those things are, I do not know. As a matter of fact, I saw where my opponent had on one of her flyers where she is protecting Social Security. There's nothing you can do as a state representative or a state senator to do anything with Social Security. That is absolutely a federal issue, and state representatives have nothing to do with that other than you can moan or cheer, as we all do.
All right. Line, let's see. I think we'll go to line number two. We did that one. Let's go to line number one in Urbana. Hello.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I want to make a comment on the part about the free markets and your energy bill. Energy companies around here raising their rates 50-60%. The New York Times about a week ago had a two-part series about the 96 bill that the Clinton administration had enacted in reference to the free market proposals for states to allow deregulation of their energy industries, and how it's been a complete failure. I think only one state, Rhode Island, has even had a minimal decrease in costs. And the second part of the series showed how energy companies have made a small fortune selling their power plants to each other. You know, Illinois Power, which sold to Exelon, the nuclear reactor at Clinton. So how you can sit around and say that free enterprise or free markets will solve these energy questions is not exactly to me, it's a disinformation, because if you read the report, the DOE report, which I did, it's a rather elaborate and detailed report. You'll see where the idea underpinning it, free markets and free, purchase of energy by consumers, just has not come about. It's all just been a corporate, almost like a scam, to say, well, we'll just wait out the 10-year limitations on power increases and just jack it up. I don't really see where this has any relevancy at all in the modern market.
Oh, well, excuse me. I agree with what you're saying, but understand the state made a decision 10 years ago to deregulate, and that is something I had nothing to do with. Now, that legislation is in place, and now we're having to deal with that legislation. If you'd like to know, and I think other candidates have expressed this same thing, I never supported a deregulation, but it is done. And what you're saying is exactly true. And the reason for that is it is impossible for there to be an absolute fair market when you try and deregulate, because there are physical assets that the utility companies own that you can't get around the value of those assets. And simply because they own those assets affects the free market. For instance, Illinois Power owns all the lines. Every power pole, every line and everything at one time was owned by Illinois Power. It's their asset. It's their stockholders' assets. And to say that you are going to allow other companies to use those companies have to pay a fee for the use of those lines. Illinois Power owns them. It's their lines. It's just like you owning an automobile and you hauling somebody. It's your automobile, and so you expect to get money for it. The problem is that the state legislature 9 or 10 years ago determined that they wanted to go into the free market. And make no mistake about this. This breaking up and free market thoughts for the utility companies is based on the judge's decision many years ago to deregulate the phone companies. Mm-hmm. And I hope that guy has to listen to menus for the rest of his life, because that was just a nightmare that happened in that. So that judge's decision is the one that has precipitated all this trying to get utility companies, which were regulated before that, onto the free market. Do we like it? I don't like it. Do we handcuff businesses because we don't like it? I don't think that that's fair either. Do we gouge or do we have enormous price increases at the end of legislative terms? That's not fair either. But the point is, we need to deal with that problem, and the solution is not one of immediate hikes. The solution is one of spreading these things out, paying attention to what's going on with this, and if it's not working, then introduce legislation that fixes it.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say that also the auction that was done to supposedly buy power, you know, this auction about a month or 2 months ago was done in basically in secret, and only one bidder, you know, IP, you know, they're all the same people. It's sort of like, you know, you were talking about the phone companies being deregulated. Yeah, well, I can get a cell phone. I don't really need a ground line if I don't want it.
Right.
I can pick from 5 or 6 or 7 cell phone companies. Prices are somewhat similar, but services are different. And ground line, I could also switch to cable. But, I mean, there are no alternatives in the power business. I mean,
well,
I can't call Con Ed in Chicago and say, hey, give me a cheaper rates.
And that's, you know, true. But
yeah.
the thing you have to understand is, yeah, what you just described for the power companies is also with the way that the state does their budgeting. It's done in private. So is it wrong? You betcha. And your question was well taken, and it's nice that you take these things and you research them before you call. I do appreciate somebody that has made the effort and has some facts. Thank you very much.
Well, I want to thank the caller, too. I hope you'll forgive me for wanting to, again, to get on some other callers, because we just have about 10 minutes left, and we have two other people right at the moment who are holding. So we'll go next to another Urbana person. This is line 3.
Yes. Hi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, I have a question. I wanted to know what your stand is on pulling the troops out of Iraq.
Out of pulling the troops out of Iraq?
Right, and do you support the president in this?
Well, once again, I'm running for a state position here, and I really don't have anything, if I were in the legislature, I don't have anything to do with that. I'm 60 years old, and so I certainly grew up in the Vietnam era, and we've seen these types of things before. What would we like to do? Well, certainly we would like to have people that are taken out of harm's way. But if it's taking one person out of harm's way exposes many people to harm's way, is that the right thing to do? It's a very difficult thing to say. And I hope that the federal government has some type of plan or some type of thoughts on how we're going to handle this. And certainly I have confidence in the federal government, because we have a two-party system and both parties are working very diligently to try and get this taken care of. And I hope that they do get it taken care of in a responsible manner that does not affect our worldwide economy or our worldwide treatment of human beings.
All right. We'll go on again. Line 2, Urbana. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
How's it going? I got a couple of kids going through the school systems, and lately I've been a bit worried about the security in our local schools. I'm just wondering, is there anything you're going to be able to do to help ban assault weapons in our local areas?
Well, the question that I have is what the term assault weapons, I think a lot of those are already banned. When I hear the word assault weapons, I think of weapons that are controlled by the federal regulations already, like you can't have a fully automatic AK-47 or Thompson machine guns. I think they're already banned. And I really don't know what the definition of assault weapons is. If that's what you're talking about, they're already banned, and it's something that we don't need to address.
Any further restrictions on guns that you would support? And generally speaking, do you favor less regulation as opposed to more regulation?
Well, I think right now there are adequate regulations on guns. The Constitution of the United States allows people the right to bear arms in the amendments. And I think right now it looks like most of the regulations are there. They need to be enforced, and they need to be enforced not only at the policing level, but when individuals who have broken those laws are taken before the courts need to impose the proper penalties. Far too often the courts take it upon themselves not to impose a penalty, and the person goes out and commits the crime again. So I think we need to make sure that the regulations we have in place are properly enforced. And then if they're not working, consider something else. But I think just the simple enforcement of the regulations as they are right now would do. And there are, quite frankly, there are many regulations that overlap and make criminals out of us, and we don't know it. For instance, I did not know that I own a firearm. I don't have a card because I haven't used it for many, many, many years. It's just mounted on a wall. I found out I'm breaking the law. I have to have a card because I've got that. I didn't know that. Did you?
Yeah, I kind of think so.
Did you?
Yeah. If it's a functional, if you could shoot it, even if it's hanging on the wall, yeah, I got to think you got to have the card.
So I guess I was a lawbreaker, but I'm in the process of getting the card right now.
Let me ask you a school-related question, and unfortunately, we don't maybe have enough time to discuss it in the depth that we should, but that has to do with school funding.
Sure.
And it seems that that, as I think I probably said on this program before, as long as I can remember, we've had people come in who were in the legislature, who are running for the legislature, who said, we think it would be a good idea to move away from the reliance on the property tax to fund schools. Everybody says that's a good idea, but it seems that politically it's impossible to get it through the General Assembly. How do you, and I believe you also favor that
yes,
swap.
Yeah,
move away from property tax, probably go to some other tax, maybe income tax. And I'm sure that you would add the provision that you don't want people to end up paying more taxes at the end of the day. You're just talking about changing the sources. But, you know, it's been talked about for a long time. It's been recommended, and it seems like it's just something that can't get through the General Assembly.
Well, make no mistake about it. What is going to happen is that property taxes are not going to be the source for school funding. The voters are not going to vote for referendums that increase property taxes anymore. It's going to stop. And if it stops, that means either the school districts have to suffer and the education has to suffer, or we have to find other ways to do it. And now is the time to do that. I really despise the word a tax swap. I like to consider it comprehensive legislation that redefines the way that we pay for our school systems. Mm-hmm. And the concept is very, very simple. If you are going to tax something, make sure that whatever you're taxing benefits from the tax. And in the case of using income tax for school funding, the figures just came out, and an educated person makes $20,000 more a year. If you tax income tax, that $20,000 is a result of education. You make more money without raising taxes because they were educated. There's more money to be taxed, and so the tax goes back to the schools. That increases the quality of education, increases the amount of money they can use, and it feeds itself. And it's the same way with if you choose to make it a combination of an income tax and maybe some type of sales tax, which is a progressive tax, admittedly. But smart people know how to make things better and cheaper. If they're cheaper, people buy more of them. Buying more of them increases the sales tax because you're buying more of them. It feeds the education fund. The people become smarter and make more of them cheaper, and so it feeds itself back in there. But you absolutely must do something to change the way we fund our schools.
Well, it seems to me that in the past the big roadblock here has been members of your party in the collar counties who aren't interested in getting this out to the floor. How do you persuade your fellow Republicans from, so say, DuPage County that this would be a good thing to do?
Well, what happens is if they are narrow-minded, as that seems to be an approach there, they have to understand that unless the quality of education throughout the state is improved, the overall revenues of the state will decrease. We're going to struggle for money. And education is the solution to everything. If you have smart people approaching difficult problems, they can be solved. So what you do is that you figure out a way that their resistance is, because the students in that area are usually about $24,000 per capita. That's what they get per student. And in downstate, it's somewhere around $5,000. That's a terrible, disparaging difference. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that also the quality of education is affected that way, so that people that in some schools can't even go and pass the test to be a janitor at the school they graduated from. Well, obviously the quality of education is affected. Those people in the collar counties need to understand that what we're going to do is we're going to try and raise the level of education throughout the state. Then they'll benefit also, because people go up into their areas and buy things. So it's something where you just have to sit down and you have to say, look, we're not going to take away your $24,000 per capita, but we're going to find a way to fund the schools properly and make sure that all kids do get a proper education.
We're getting real close to the end of the time. I want to try to get at least one more caller. Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I had a quick question. Would you have voted for the Governor Blagojevich budget that had lots of money for U of I? Would you have voted for that budget?
The governor's budget, only the last one that was passed, only had $12 million, which is about 1.25% increase.
And it was 4% increase.
No, not for the University of Illinois. It was 1.5% increase over the budget.
So you wouldn't have voted for funding for U of I?
I would have done exactly what I told you Mrs. Jacobson should have done. I'd have held her feet to fire in a committee where they wanted another vote.
How can you do that with no experience?
If I'm elected, I get the opportunity.
The question, though, is at that point. I mean, we've talked about the fact that it's difficult sometimes for members when somebody decides the budget, it comes to you. There maybe wasn't enough as much money as you would have liked to go to the University of Illinois, but that you can't vote no on the entire budget. Wouldn't you vote to pass the budget?
Well, understand that when the budget comes before you and you don't know how everyone else is going to vote, and if you believe that the University of Illinois, if you've been advised by the chancellor or the president of the University of Illinois that they would like to have more money in that budget and don't support it, then I would not vote for it. If they said, we'd like to try and get more and we would like for you to vote against this budget and see if it can be renegotiated because there are enough votes to get against it, I would do that. If that's all that we were going to get, maybe so. But I would have found a way to try and get more money for the University of Illinois.
We're just about the point where we have to finish. Maybe we have about a minute. We've talked about a number of things. Is there some last thing you'd like to say?
Yeah, I want to talk very briefly about All Kids. All Kids is a very deceptive program that actually insures less kids than it did before. There were 200,000 kids on Medicaid before. They had to be transferred over to All Kids because the state doesn't pay Medicaid bills. Only about 40,000 of those kids are now covered and actually receive treatment. They have an All Kids card, but it's not worth anything.
Do you see a problem with how long it takes the state to pay its bills?
Absolutely. My goodness, they financed the rest of that budget by not paying $2 billion worth of health care bills, and they've already spent that money. That money is not there. They didn't pay them, and they spent it elsewhere. You bet. They've got to be fiscally responsible.
And as a member of the General Assembly, what do you do about that?
You make sure that when bills come before that they'd like to have spending bills, you vote against those, and you try and do everything you can in committee to thwart those bills by twisting people's arms when they have other pet projects they'd like to have done.
All right. And you can resist the temptation if someone comes to you and says, well, we know there's something in your district we want to do here. There's some money for you. But the thing is, you got to go along with everybody else as we do the whole thing.
Whatever the people in the district feel is best for the district, then I would try and do that first and foremost.
All right. Well, our guest in this hour is Rex Bradfield. He is a candidate for the Illinois House in the 103rd District. He is a Republican. His opponents here, the two-term incumbent, Naomi Jacobson, she's a Democrat. She will be on this program on Friday, November 3rd, 1 week from today. You'll have the chance to talk with her. Also next week on the program on Tuesday, the Green Party candidate in the race, Tom Abram, will be here as well. So we want to give you a chance to talk with all the candidates, as many as we can here from our area, where there are contested races. We're having them here on the program. Thank you very much for being
here. Thank you very much for having me. And thanks to the callers. They were excellent questions. Thanks a lot for your input.